Before we begin tonight, I want to mention just at least one thing, maybe two, if I can remember what the second thing was I was just thinking of right down there. But one thing I wanted to mention is we are coming upon quickly February 12th, which will be our, technically it'll be about our 52nd anniversary at this present location, but we're going to celebrate it as 50 years, at least 50 years and counting is what we're going to do at this present location. And we're going to talk about some of the things that have gone on from this place and how they have touched not only this community, but also really the whole world. And so we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to challenge ourselves in the next 50 years. What are we going to do from here? And so we're looking for that, and we hope that you're praying about that. Beginning on February 12th is when that will take place. It's going to be a special day. You'll be getting a flyer about it, I'm sure, here for too long. We're going to just have a wonderful day. We're going to have some special speakers at our 2 o'clock service that afternoon. Yes, a 2 o'clock service. That's unusual, but that's what we're going to do this day. And we're going to have some special speakers come, and even some from this very congregation speak to us during the 2 o'clock worship service. It's going to be a wonderful day. We're going to have a good potluck that day, and just it's going to be a touching day, I'm sure, and a challenging day, and a day of good memories. And so please be inviting people to that. And if you would like someone that you care about to receive a personal invitation from the church, I know you'll invite them as well, but if you would like someone to receive a personal invitation from the church, just email Elaine or give her the address, and we will make sure that they get one of those in the mail, because we want to make this day just as powerful as it possibly can be. Can't remember the second thing, so turn in your Bibles to James chapter 3. James chapter 3. They say the first thing to go is your eyesight, and I can't remember what they say the second thing is. But James chapter 3. Starting in verse 13, James 3, verses 13 through 18. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. I understand that as James is writing this, this is intended to be maybe not necessarily a rhetorical question, but one he's not expecting them to answer verbally. This is supposed to cause them to reflect about what their lives truly is, to see if they truly are wise. But in my office here a while ago, I was thinking about what if this was not a rhetorical question and a preacher got up and don't do this, but if he said, whoever thinks you are wise, please stand up. And of course, everybody would probably be thinking like I would, well, you know what, I'm a pretty wise guy. I know to look both ways before I cross the street. I know where my mouth is and how to get my hand and fork to that mouth without endangering my safety. I'm a pretty wise man, so I would stand up. So yeah, I feel pretty confident in that. I'm a pretty wise man. But then James has us right where he wants us. And then if he went on and started going like this, he said, okay, since you are wise, show me your manner of life, your good works. What are some things that you've done to show your wisdom? Now, probably right here, some of us would begin to sweat. Oh, you mean James isn't going to just take my word for it? Just take my word for it, James. I'm a wise man. That's he's not just going to take my word for it. He wants proof. And so maybe some of us would start sweating just a little bit. But then he would go on and give the qualifications that we just read. Who is wise among you? Are you envious? Do you have strife in your hearts? Are you thinking more about earthly things, sensual things, and then so on and so forth? And then probably one by one, we might start sitting down right where we were. Are you a wise person? That's a great question. And we asked a thought-provoking question this morning. Let's ask another one tonight. Am I a wise person? I want us to think about these things, and hopefully all of us will strive to be wise with godly wisdom. And hopefully this lesson will not only help us to see if we are, but how we can become more like God or God-like in His wisdom throughout our lives. 3 points we want to examine tonight. Number one, eliminate. Number two, elevate. And number three, engage. And hopefully we'll take each of these right from this passage that we're going to study tonight. James 3, verse 13. True wisdom begins, first of all, with a tearing down. And I believe this passage teaches this. A tearing down or an elimination. You remember Simeon, who was told he would not see death until he had seen Christ? Remember, he held the baby Jesus in his hands in Luke chapter 2, verse 34, and he made this statement. And I have an idea. Nobody understood it at the time. But now, looking back 2,000 years, we get a good idea of what was so profound about this statement. He held the baby Jesus in his hands, and he said, "Behold, this child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Israel." So whether or not Jesus was a baby, I have to look back and see. But this child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Israel. Do you notice what comes before the rising again? There was a fall before there could be a rising again. And you'll see as you trace the New Testament especially, but not just the New, all the way back through the Old, that before people could really become great, many times they had to fall first. They had to be humbled in order to become great. The foundation of the Beatitudes, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." The poor in spirit, those who realize their need. There's something I need in my life that I don't have, and that's what I want to seek after. You know, the Native Americans who once roamed all over this great country of ours, we would consider them poor in material blessings. But they didn't know that they were poor in material blessings. As a matter of fact, they probably thought they were very wealthy. But we would consider them to be poor, but they didn't feel the poverty. True poorness or poverty comes when you realize what you are lacking. The first step in becoming what James is talking about here and getting that wisdom from God is to realize what we are lacking. That elimination of some things in our life. Let me just mention a couple. We won't take time to study each of these people. But you think about Isaiah, back in Isaiah chapter 6. You remember when he saw in that vision just the glory of God and his train that filled the whole temple. And you remember what Isaiah said? "Woe is me, for I am about to be undone, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell among a people of unclean lips. I'm about to be destroyed because here I am in the presence of God, and I've got no business being here." I love that about Isaiah, don't you? And then what about Solomon in 1 Kings 3, 7, when it was told to him that he was going to be a king over all of Israel? You remember what he prayed to God? Part of that prayer, he said to God, "I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. God, please give me wisdom. I'm like a little child. I don't know how to go out. I don't know how to come in." In other words, "God, I'm lacking so many things, and I cannot do this without you." And then what about one of our favorites, Peter, who was naturally aggressive, self-assertive, self-confident, and a person that struggled with the need to align himself with the things of God. The many times he tried to correct Jesus, and Jesus had to tell him, "Get thee behind me, Satan." He didn't say what he said to Satan. Remember what he told Satan? "Get thee hence, get away from me." But he told Peter, "Get back where you belong, get behind me, get behind me, get thou behind me, Satan." And so it wasn't until really later in his life when Jesus was resurrected and he said, "Do you love me, Peter? Feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my lambs." Where Peter truly realized, you know what, now I would die for you. Now he said he would before, but what did he do? I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know him. But you look at Peter's life after the resurrection of Christ, and here's a man who got it. He understood where he was in relationship to the Christ. And then what about Christ himself? If anybody ever walked on this earth had the right to boss people around just because he was the boss, was it not our Savior? But what did he do instead? Philippians 2, verses 5 through 8. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who took upon himself the form of a servant, and it goes on, became obedient to death, even the death of the cross. Jesus saw the needs of other, and rather than just seek to fill his own needs, he sought to help the needs of others. James reminds us that the first step in gaining the wisdom of God is to realize our deep spiritual needs and not thinking that we've arrived just because of where we are in life. So eliminate any type of thinking that would say, I'm more important than anybody else. And that's what he talks about as he begins. But then secondly, after we eliminate those things in our lives, those things that would be sensual, that would try to put our own desires and our needs before anybody else's, I'm going to do what pleases me even if it hurts other people. Once we really understand that we're not going to be like that anymore, and no doubt it takes daily work to try to overcome those feelings. But once we do that, then we need to elevate. We need to add some things to our lives. Go down to verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Okay, we've eliminated those things that are from below, that are from the world. Now let's elevate to things that are from above. Things that are from above. When one allows Christ to help him eliminate worldly things from his heart, then he can elevate to those things that are from above. And then he gives us a list of these things. These things that are above are first pure. This is a purity that comes from the heart, but is visibly noticeable. You can tell by the way a person lives his life. Not first necessarily numerically, like not like number one, number two, number three, but first essentially. Before you can add any of these other things or elevate to these things, there must first be a purity. In other words, these other characteristics are as outgrowths of this first quality. Other qualities can't be present without purity. This word, the same word, is used to describe God, 1 John 3:3, and let every man that hath his hope in him purifieth himself, even as he, talking about God, is pure. Jesus hammered the Pharisees with this type of thinking because they were pure on the outside, but inside they were like a whited sepulcher, a whited tomb. They were painted on the outside, but on the inside they were filled with dead men's bones. This is a purity that starts inside and then works outwardly. You know, it is a constant challenge to remain pure, isn't it? From the day that we are baptized, we became pure, and now we walk in the light. It's a constant challenge to maintain purity, isn't it? In other words, this is not something, this wisdom that comes from above. Can we say, well, I'm pure today, check that off my list, let's move on to step number two. Now, this is something that we think about daily. We strive to maintain purity. I'm going to live as purely as possible. And those times when I sin and fall short, I'm going to ask God to forgive me, and I'm going to continue on. It's first pure, then peaceable. The wisdom from above secures the Christian's relationship with God and improves his relationship with his fellow man. Remember, worldly wisdom was, give me. Wisdom from above produces peace. What can I do for you? That's the peacemaker, isn't it? I was just kidding around, and I hope they know that. But in our elders' meeting, we were talking about a debate that Kyle Butt had with an evolutionist and with an atheist. I don't know if you've ever heard that. But the atheist would be very, very frustrating to debate because he really didn't try to answer any arguments or really to put a whole lot of argument out. He did make some arguments, but didn't really stick to them. As a matter of fact, he makes the statement, it's my job not to win the argument, but just to confuse you. And so that's what he strove to do throughout the debate. And I said, and they said, how did Kyle do? I said, he did a lot better than I did. I'd have been over there on. Now, I wouldn't have, I hope. I don't know, maybe I would have. But he was actually bigger than me, so I wouldn't have. But what good would that have done? That just made me feel better. What good would it have done him? See, when we get this wisdom from above, it is peaceable. My needs don't come first. What do you need? But then third, it's gentle. That word means equitable or forbearing. Titus enjoins his readers to be gentle. Titus 3:2. Even when we know we're in the right, we deal gently with our fellow man. You know, many use the excuse of maintaining purity, even when they are in the right, to forego the golden rule. And this goes back to the illustration I just used. I may be in a debate with that man and be absolutely 100% right. It doesn't give me the right to be mean to him. It doesn't give me the right to hate him. Oftentimes, people will use the excuse of keeping things pure to mistreat other people. I love this statement from Guyon Woods where he said this. He said, a man can be right in principle and be absolutely wrong in method. Now think about that. A man can be right in principle but absolutely wrong in method. If you and I have a disagreement and I am 100% right, and I would say something like, any idiot could see that. I may be right in principle, but absolutely wrong in method. You see, this is how we deal with our fellow man. Just stop right there and just think about these things. First of all, pure. Can you just imagine? Let's have pipe dreams for just a moment. Could you imagine if everybody in the world was pure? Can you imagine if everybody else was peaceable? Everybody in this world was peaceable. In other words, if it's going to keep peace, I may not always get my way, but if it's not sinful, I can indulge in this. And then if people were gentle, could you imagine what this world would be? But think about this. Imagine if everybody in the church was pure. Imagine if everybody in the church was peaceable. Imagine if everybody in the church was gentle. Wouldn't it be a wonderful place to be a part of, even more if we were like that? And then easy to be entreated or open to reason. Does not think that there's nothing left for this person to learn. He doesn't appear to be unapproachable to other people, a know-it-all. Someone that is easy to talk to, easy to entreat. How do those things fit you? Have you eliminated those worldly desires? And have you elevated? Have you strove to do these things that we talked about? Are you peaceable? Are you gentle? Are you easy to approach? Are you easy to understand? Or does everybody have to walk on eggshells around you because of a fear to offend you? Christians ought not be like that. You ought to be able to come up to a Christian and say, you know what? This is how I feel. Or you're wrong, and here's why. And be easy to be entreated. And then last, after we've eliminated, after now we have elevated, we engage. These previous qualities of the heart are qualities of the heart. But look at the last part of verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruit, without partiality and without hypocrisy. So these qualifications that now we are striving to attain in our Christian life, then we engage these qualities. We put these qualities into practice. A change of heart, listen carefully, a change in heart should always be noticeable. A change in heart should always be noticeable. Let's start small and then work big. Have you ever had a disagreement with your spouse? And then you sit there a little bit later after everything has calmed down and you thought, you know what, she was right. As usual, she was right. but I'm not going to tell her. Now, you've come a ways in your mind because you admitted that she's right. But a change of heart should always be noticeable. Maybe 20 days later, you can work up the courage to say, you remember 20 days ago when we had this disagreement? You were right. No. A change of heart should always be noticeable. There should be a change in behavior. And this is what we're talking about in this third and final point. It should be full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. When you possess wisdom from above, you're full of mercy. You're full of mercy, and that mercy shows in the way you treat other people. Mercy has been defined in many different ways. So here's one that I think would be easy to remember. Mercy is the capacity to be moved by the needs of others. It's the capacity to be moved by the needs of others. What a challenge. Wisdom from above shows itself because you see other people in need and you're moved by that and compelled to engage to help their need. It's easy to be moved to compassion for those who suffer no fault of their own, isn't it? That's easy. If someone is hurt and they're innocent, if somebody is killed and they're killed innocently, they were innocent in this. It's easy to be moved to compassion for those type of people, innocent ones. You know, a little bitty baby or a child when they hurt. I mean, it's so easy to be moved to compassion for them. But it's difficult to have mercy on those who suffer because of their own sins. But even more difficult when those people are suffering because of their own sins and they don't show remorse for their sins. That's difficult. There's the challenge, isn't it? It's easy to feel compassion for those who are innocent, but it's a lot more difficult to feel compassion for those who are hurting because of something they've done to themselves. And then it's even more difficult when they're hurting because of something they've done to themselves and they show no remorse for it. They don't have any desire to change. Wisdom from above, however, demands it. Listen to this challenge and then we'll close the lesson. Matter of fact, let's turn to it. I want us to see this in black and white. Luke chapter 6. You want a challenge for the week? Here it is. Luke chapter 6, look at verse 36. I guess I should have said in red and white if you have the red letter edition in your New Testament. I want you to see it in red and white. Luke 6, verse 36, here's our challenge. Wisdom from above will help us to take this challenge, and here it is. Be ye therefore merciful. All right, Jesus, I can handle that. I'll have more compassion towards others, and that'll be done with it. But then look at the rest. As your Father also is merciful. Oh, man. He had to put that last part in there, didn't he? What did God the Father do for you? He was merciful to you when it was all your fault. And he was merciful to humanity when they showed no remorse. Wasn't he? But God commendeth his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's mercy, isn't it? And so wisdom from above, first of all, eliminates the worldly things that so easily come into our hearts. Wisdom from above helps us to elevate, to add things to our lives, and then to engage in the lives of others. Good fruits. You know, it's not good enough just to have good intentions. You've got to put it into practice. One of the things I love about the Tanzanians, and I didn't see this so much in Kenya, but I don't know if Franco can tell me if they actually did this or not. But in Tanzania, they have this thing. It's kind of like our version of bless your heart. They would have somebody, if you see somebody under a horrible load, they're bearing a heavy burden, you walk by them and you say, "Poli nakazi, sorry for your hard work, poli nakazi." And they just love that. "Oh, asante Baba, thank you so much for thinking of me." Now, you say, "Poli nakazi, sorry for your hard work, I'm not going to do anything to help you, but I'm sorry you've got to do it." And then you just walk right on. But they're so grateful for it. That's not the wisdom from above. Wisdom from above is seeing one's need and acting on their behalf. When we eliminate worldly wisdom and we realize our reliance on Christ, we put these things into practice. If you are doing that, then we could stand firmly and say, "Yes, I have wisdom of God, the wisdom of God." If not, let's work on these things and strive to add these things to our lives. If there's anything we can help you with tonight, or perhaps you've not yet obeyed the gospel of Christ, we would love to help you with that tonight. We spoke pretty plainly about it this morning. If that fits anybody's needs tonight, do you believe with all of your heart that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and you want to put him on in baptism tonight? We'll be glad to do that with you and for you. Or perhaps at one time you did obey the gospel of Christ, but you've not been living as you should, and you've sinned in a public way, and you need the prayers of the church. Let us help you with that. We're going to sing a song here, and if you are needing to respond to the invitation, we encourage you to come forward while together we stand and sing this song.